So now they're...
Okay.
Now they're on.
Oh, now they're working, okay. To meet and talk with me, yesterday we had a meeting, or I had a meeting with hospital personnel and people associated with medical records copying that lasted, I think, about 3.5 hours, and it was a fairly passionate meeting in terms of people's perhaps feelings about this issue, as a lot of times things are when we're dealing with consumer issues and there are costs involved and people have, you know, points of view. But I think it was also a productive meeting as far as working through some discussion on the bill, and I really appreciate that help. I guess if the members recall last year when I brought this up, there were a number of different concerns with regard to records that are copied for people who are either involved in some type of a legal matter, whether it's an accident, a workers' comp claim. So for those people and for their insurers who need to get copies of their records in determining whether bills should be paid. And I think it's important to understand that that is what we're talking about. We're not talking about a bill for charges related to, say, a law firm's costs. Often law firms are involved in representing people with regard to these matters, as are insurance companies involved in these matters. But ultimately, we're talking about the patient's right to get copies of their records for a particular purpose and how much that patient should be charged for that copying. And there are some governing principles that we have to follow besides the specific language that's in our existing law. And those principles are kind of a two-edged or two sides of the same coin, both with regard to federal and state law. There's specific federal law that talks about how records must be kept confidential and the rules involving, you know, what we typically talk about is the HIPAA law, the rules involving confidentiality. But then the flip side of that same coin are the rules that govern a patient's right to have access to those records for a reasonable charge. And the law does not allow the state to be any less restrictive than federal. The federal law does not allow the states to be any less restrictive than state law. And less restrictive, and there's an article that I've provided if you want to read this again sometime before we get to the next, before we would actually vote on this, means that the state cannot make it more difficult for the patient to get access to records in terms of more expensive than what federal law requires, nor can the state make the records less confidential in terms of the protection. And sometimes there's a bit of a, you know, there's a bit of a gray line there between those two issues. It isn't always as clear, and I guess where that comes in, we can certainly have discussion. But those seem to be the guiding principles. Then going specifically to Senate File 857 and starting to kind of walk you through the bill, the initial language on line 1.8 really, I think, was just language that our author helped us. I don't know that there's a substantive reason for that change in language. I think it was really just to clarify or bring the language up to date, unless counsel wants to offer anything else there. It was really kind of more of a technical change than a substantive one.
Madam Chair and members, too, and I think you're working, there's a committee engrossment, I think, that you have in your materials.
Yeah.
There were some amendments that were adopted right. in the subcommittee, although the amendments there are primarily technical, except I think it deleted Section 4 of the bill as well.
Ms. Pontius, the document SO857CE1, is that the committee engrossment bill?
Madam Chair, yes. That okay, reflects the bill as it was amended in subcommittee last session.
So we are working off of the bill that's in front of us is the committee engrossment. Senator Olson, do you have that?
Yes, I do,
okay.
Madam Chair.
All right.
Okay. So so then moving forward, I think the first substantive change or would be on line 1.12. And the reason for that The reason for that particular language is because of a practice that has developed in Minnesota where someone requests the record and on file, let's say I want my family doctor to give me all the records in the possession of that particular provider, and that record may include previous health care records that I've had, maybe because I moved to that location and I've carried all my records with me or asked doctors to transfer records to that file. So that would be one reason why a provider would have records from another facility. Or it might be that I was in an accident in some location and had treatment in an emergency room there, and then those records got transferred back to my file. But in one way or another, there are often cases where providers have records. In fact, it's very common for them to have records that originated in other facilities. However, what was happening is that when the requests for all records were being made, typically the answer coming back was that the provider could only give the records from that were originated in that facility. I don't believe, and I haven't heard from anyone in the conversations we've had, that there's really any legal requirement that would allow the providers to be doing that. And as I said, the flip side of the coin is that a patient must have access to the extent that there isn't a law that prevents the access. And actually, the healthcare facility itself only even has a right to those records typically because the patient has given that right. So the right originates with the patient. So anyway, that's what that line was designed to address. And I'm not sure if you want me, Madam Chair, as we go through these things one at a time to just kind of go through where I believe we're at with the discussion related to that. You just want me to walk through at this point? Okay. So that's what that language is for. Then on 1.17 and 1.18, the authorized person language is, again, just really kind of a technical change. The next page, the initial language on 2.4 and 2.16, again, is technical language designed to conform with those other changes on the first page. Then the bulk of the language on the rest of the bill through line 2.20 has to do with the actual charges. And so without going through all of that, I'll just note that under existing language, there is no distinction of the amount charged regardless of the number of pages required, unlike most other states where, you know, there's kind of a diminishing cost charged for larger orders of records. In most states, not all, but we have just one flat fee per page regardless of the number of pages requested. And the change that is provided not only reduces the amount of fees, but it also sets up different charges based on the number of copies requested, as most other states do. And it also states that if the records can be provided electronically, then they must make the records available by electronic means if they're requested that way. And again, it's only if they have the records maintained that way. And then there's a small fee on the presumption that it's going to be much less expensive to make those to make them available in that manner. Then the next change on line 2.27 of the engrossment is that only one retrieval fee can be charged by a particular facility for each request. Minnesota law allows not only a per-page charge, but it also allows a retrieval fee to be charged for the cost of gathering and, you know, the work involved in in compiling and copying the records. So it's kind of a processing fee. And actually, I would just have to say the retrieval fee really isn't the accurate, I don't think, accurate language that should be used as far as making a change there, because there's federal law that really specifically prohibits charging for that reason. But in any event, the practice that was developing in some areas and from some facilities would be that from the same facility, if a person was requesting, let's just say, 10 records, and two originated in the emergency room, two originated in the physical therapy department, two were billing records, and two came from the hospital or clinic, these retrieval fees were being compounded, where you might see over $50 worth of retrieval fees added on to the same 15 pages worth of records. So this is to clarify that that practice shouldn't be allowed where it all originates from the same facility. And then the last substantive change is the on line 3.8 is the change that says during the period of time a consent is valid, it applies to all health records generated up to the time the request is made, regardless of when the consent was executed, subject to any specified or limitations specified in the consent. And I guess that this is a change the committee made. The rest of it, I guess, was something that was deleted. But essentially what this is designed to get at is situations where a person's been involved in an accident and they're going to need to have repeated visits to the doctor. That's typically the situation where a legal representative would get a consent from a client. And the client will specifically state the period of time they want the authorization to be valid, and it can be valid for up to a year according to existing state law. Rather than either the client rather than the attorney having to get a new authorization from the person every time they have another doctorate visit, because that's the way the hospitals have been interpreting this in some cases, that if they sign the consent form, let's just say as of today, now if I go to the doctor's visit tomorrow, they're not allowing the legal representative to use that authorization, even though on its face it says it's valid for records, to get the records from tomorrow. So that's designed to get at that issue as well. And so that's the bill, Madam Chair.
So, Senator Olson, can you go through with us some of the issues that were brought up during the session?
Sure.
That took this into an interim project, and then where we are in terms of the discussion on those specific issues.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With regard to the specific, that specific question, going back to the first page on line 1.11, and the question... unless there are other people here today who raise different issues, the issue that was raised about this from the healthcare or the records perspective was that sometimes there are records that are of a sensitive nature where someone may have said, or for whatever reason, at the time that they signed an original authorization to transfer those records to the existing facility, that they might have said these records are not allowed to be re-released. So in other words, you know, they didn't want the hospital to just give them to anyone else or treat it as a blanket authorization. And so the concern raised was whether that language would be in conflict with a later release that says, I want all my records regardless of where they originated. And... So what we talked about as a way to make sure, I pointed out in the conversation not only the reason why the legal representative for the person needs all these records, and that it really shouldn't be and has the right to make that decision. So even if the medical records or the hospitals are concerned about the patient's interests, it really they still have to follow the law in terms of the patient and their legal representative's ability to get those records. But if they, in explaining the reason why, there's discovery involved usually in these kinds of situations, or documents from insurance companies that require the person to sign saying that they have disclosed all of their records, and the lawyer certainly in representing that person has to look at everything, assuming their client gives them that right and wants them to be able to see what's all in their medical history and what should be disclosed, what shouldn't be disclosed. If there's a request in discovery that says that you have to sign under penalty of perjury, or essentially stating that you've provided all the records. Most people don't even know everything that's in their medical records. You know, it compiles over time and they can't remember. But to get at the issue then, the suggestion was made, and I think it's a reasonable suggestion, that there should perhaps be some language added to the authorization that specifically makes it clear that the person is agreeing to include those records, even those records where they have specifically in the past stated that they did not want the records to be re-released. In fact, if they wanted to exclude records that where they had stated they didn't want the records to be re-released, they would have an option to do that. I'm not sure if this committee recalls or who was on the conference committee, but a couple of years ago, I think it was on a public safety conference committee. I'm sure Senator Moy was on that committee. But there was an amendment to a bill that I actually authored that required the Department of Health to put together a standard authorization for release of medical records so that there would be one standard form that when people use that form, they could know they would get copies of records rather than each hospital having to generate its own form and sometimes causing confusion and extra cost and waste of time. So they eventually did put together this authorization form. And I guess my suggestion would be that if it's necessary, there might be a good idea to have a cross-reference to this form to address that issue, just to make sure that re-release question doesn't become a problem for the healthcare providers. I think that was a suggestion they made, and I think that was a good suggestion. Then going on to the second page, the charges themselves are actually kind of the crux of the biggest amount of contention. And there are two related but different issues here. One of the issues relates to electronic medical records. The state is presently under a mandate to eventually get to go to an all electronic medical record system, and is in the process of doing that. Healthcare facilities are in the process of doing that. And also by 2015, all of these records need to be able to talk to each other. I guess there's interoperable is the word. They need to be interoperable. And so there's the facilities are now in the process of working through the getting records up and online electronically. I think we agreed in concept in the discussion that wherever it's possible to make these records available to a patient electronically and to make them available in as inexpensive a way as possible, that we should be making sure that that's incorporated into this process of, you know, developing electronic medical record software and talking about, you know, so that not only can doctors see these records through email or get into, you know, a different site or whatever and see a complete medical record. So when we're talking about medical homes and so forth, that we have the ability to look at a whole comprehensive picture, But I don't think, and someone will tell me if I'm wrong, that there was any disagreement that we also want to comply with the concept that we're supposed to make these records as accessible for patients as possible and as inexpensive for them to get as possible. I am told that there are some situations where people, and just going to the bill, you'll notice from the bill that it doesn't require a facility to provide an electronic medical record. It only requires where this capability is already available, where records are electronically stored, that then a person would have a right to an electronic copy of their record. Now, I'm told that there are some situations with older software where someone can look at a record, make a paper copy of a record, but can't actually put it on a disk. And I guess I'm not enough. That's hard for me to comprehend because with our PCs, that's really not the case. Typically, if we can open something and look at it, we can print it. But I'm told that that is the case in some cases with the hospital's facility and older software. So it may be that there should be language added here that would say that the provider, where they not only maintain but have the capability to duplicate by disk, to capability to make it available electronically, then they have to make it available electronically. And I think that's reasonable, provided that it doesn't become a rationale to write software in a way that wouldn't make it available to be able to be downloaded on a disk. Right now, from my perspective, and I think going through this you'll understand why, there's a lot of profit motive involved, or profit, I shouldn't say motive because I can't speak to what anyone's motive is, but there's potentially a profit incentive when you have when you're charging a per page cost for something, as if you were printing it or when you are printing it on paper, there's a built-in charge there that's far exceeding, normal copying charges in other circumstances. So I don't think we want to make it so open-ended that that there would be a reason not to have the software allow a paper copy or an electronic copy to be made. So I think the language has to address both the reality that it might not be possible at this point, but also to make sure that there isn't any long-term incentive not to make it as accessible and inexpensive as possible. And then we go to the language that specifically has to do, or I guess it was actually jumping back up above, the actual cost of making paper records. And the discussion we had led me to believe that most of the effort or discussion away from committee within the healthcare provider field has centered more on this second issue that I just described as far as electronic medical records and where things are going with that, in terms of looking at what is the actual charge for copying medical records, paper copies of medical records.
It's not resolved, or it is?
It's not a resolved issue, and we have some I have some materials for the committee that illustrate charges from other states, and I think we're going to hear from someone who works for a company in another state that does this as a business, and then there are also facilities here who do this in-house. So maybe once we've heard some testimony on that, I have some more to say on that, and I can make reference to those materials, but maybe we should wait until, since that's an unresolved issue, till we kind of get into that one.
So the next issue is just the retrieval fee issue?
Then, yes. And again, the retrieval fee issue, I'm not sure that I remember the testimony from last year, Madam Chair, that a lot of the people here aren't doing that. So that isn't necessarily the practice for everyone, where this language would even affect them, although it is certainly the practice for some. Okay. And then the last issue, in terms of records generated up through the time that, You know, we had some discussion about the law. I'm not sure that we actually ended up with any real disagreement about that. I guess someone will correct me if I'm wrong. Other than just to make very sure, again, maybe some additional language is necessary so that the patient, so that it's clear to the medical facility that the patient is specifically authorizing records going forward as opposed to just records up through the day that the release is signed. I know there was one person that had some concern about whether that was allowed under federal law, you know, and if there's some concern about that, they were going to make us aware of that today.
Okay. So we have two individuals who are going to shed some light on this discussion. Is it Mr. Thomas? Is it Sinus?
Sinus, yep.
Sinus.
Madam Chair, my colleague Rita Teresi
this is all the other states.
Legal nurse consultant.
I have that. Oh, you have that.
Mr. Sinus and Ms. Teresi, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Whoever is going to be speaking, just identify yourself for the record once you start speaking.
My name is Rita Teresi. I'm a legal nurse consultant with Robbins, Kaplan, Miller, and Teresi and a member of MAJ. And I have been working
Ms. Teresi, MAJ is... MAJ
Minnesota Association for Justice.
Very good.
And I have been working in this field for 21 years. My job within our law firm is to request and review medical records for Minnesotans who would like us to represent them in various types of cases. We have run into a problem with obtaining medical records because of the cost of medical records. There have been instances where we have been put at a cost of between $20,000 and $30,000 to obtain medical records. And because of that cost, we have elected to review the records at the facilities. When we ask to review them electronically so that we may choose or select which records we might want copied for our files, we are told that it is impossible for us to review them electronically. I presented to one hospital, local hospital, to review medical records because of an exorbitant cost for copying those records. So I said I would come and review them, thinking that I would review them electronically. I was met with about 15 feet of medical records to review that they had copied. I asked if I could just review them online, and they said that they had no mechanism for me to do that. They had no way for me to do that. They had to make copies of all of the records in their file and then have me review all of those pages to determine what would be pertinent. That would seem to be simple, to spend a day and a half at a facility and look at records, but the problem also lies in how those records are then maintained electronically and how they reproduce electronically. You may get a clinic note that has the substantive part maybe on page 7 or 10 of the note. And what precedes that substantive note is the patient's history, the medications, everything that has happened to that patient since they started being seen at that facility. So that precedes that note. The date of that note is at the top of all of that. And so you end up getting many extra pages for what you actually need, and it's very wasteful. I can tell you that part of the waste, I can tell you that electronically we will pay for a page like this. And all it says is that what follows is the discharge summary. And then we have one that says, and what follows is the history and physical. And this will go on and on in the medical record, so there is much waste. And asking for copies of medical records. Certification fees are being escalated, and it is of interest because facilities are having a difficult time certifying medical records now because of the way they are maintained. There's one facility that gave us a quote of certifying the first 100, 200 records for $20, Additionally, at 300, there was an extra $15, and if there was over 1,000 records, we would pay an additional $25. So those are cumulative charges based on the number of records that are being produced.
Mr. Essay, what is the significance of having a certified record?
Well, I was going to get to that, Madam Chair, because certified is supposed to tell us that we have a complete set of medical records from that facility. Everything that is in their file, they have copied and provided to us. However, certification is very difficult now because facilities cannot always access everything that is within the electronic record. I had one instance that I was looking at records, and I knew that we were missing records because I knew that during a three-day hospitalization, somebody must have taken a blood pressure. But there were no blood pressures. There were no vital signs in any of the records. I asked three times, and I got nothing. I went to the facility, and I said, I'd like to review the original record. And they provided me with a few extra records that we didn't originally get. Then when I asked them while I was there, you know, to look for something else, they continued to go into the computer, and three times they again printed off what I already had. It wasn't until I went back to one of the attorneys at our office, they contacted the in-house counsel, and they said there has to be something missing here. Then we got more medical records. But I can tell you that that original set of medical records that we received from the facility that was incomplete was certified as a complete set of records. At the time that the in-house counsel produced the remaining records, we were told that they could not certify that we now had a complete copy of medical records. So it's a very difficult issue because we don't know when we have everything.
So, Mr. Essay, do you have times when you ask for the complete file and there are times when you don't want the complete file?
Yes, there are times when we might just want to limit what we need. It might be just for a certain period of time in a hospitalization or medical records from a clinic that are dating from one date to the next. We can put a start and an end date for the purposes of our review. And then there are times when we want a complete set of everything. I do have one example of this volume of medical records was $1,200. And I was asking for specific time periods. And this is about 4 to 5 days, maybe 4.5 days of medical records that I wanted. And I obviously can't pass this around because of confidentiality, but I put tabs on the pages that have the pertinent information, and the rest is repetitious. In this record, within these 4 or 5 days, there's 14 copies of one doctor's progress note. The electronic records are very repetitious, and so it's very wasteful. It's very difficult to get something concise and compact when you have many, many copies of the same thing.
So, Mr. Essay, I'm a little bit confused because when you make the request, you specify that you would like the records for a certain duration of time or specific sets of times.
Mm-hmm.
So you're given the record for those specific sets of times. But then you're saying that within that there are all kinds of wasteful stuff.
Correct. That we pay $1,200 for about this much of pertinent information, and the remainder is a lot of repetition of electronic records, of vital signs sheets, it's repetitious.
But isn't that your job to determine what's the pertinent information and what's not pertinent?
If I go to the facility to review them, if I request records, you know, it is difficult to go to a facility every time you need medical records and to every facility. One client may have 10 different providers. Oftentimes, we will just send requests. We prefer sending a request and saying, please provide us with a certified copy of your complete file. When we know there's been an extensive hospital stay or extensive medical records, then we know we can narrow things down and not have to go through putting the client through the expense of paying for records that we don't need. But in doing that, you know, I did make the request here. I didn't know until I got them that this was such repetitious material, that the notes and the graphs, they were repeated on so many pages. And it is a continuous thing. So if you want the date on a given record, you know, it's at the start of this continuum, then you get the meat of the record, the note. So if you just want that one page of note, there's no way of documenting what date that represents.
But Ms. Teresi, again, I'm confused. I'm the clerk that received your request.
Mm-hmm.
And your request says, we would like the complete records for this patient from January 1st through January 15th. And so I got you the complete record certified as you request for January 1st through January 15th. But now you're saying, oh, but you're sending us wasteful stuff. So now it's my job to go in and take things out? And then what if in the pagination there are pages that are missing? And then you're going to come back and say, we asked for the complete record. Why are pages missing? I'm confused here, because whose job is it to go through and to pull out what you feel is pertinent or not pertinent in a complete set of records if you made the request for it?
Madam Chair, I think actually that the problem is intertwined. I think it's difficult to separate the maintaining electronic records and reproducing electronic records with the cost of that production. I think it is intertwined. I think that you do have to pay per page, but the way in which electronic records can be produced is very difficult because it is very wasteful. If we could get the electronic record in its electronic form, then it would be much easier for us to select what we want to print and what is necessary to print, if at all. But not having access to the electronic record electronically, it is one of the reasons that this...
I have one more follow-up, Senator Olson, and then I'll come to you. So does the same problem exist in non-electronic records when people are copying it for you?
With...
wasteful pages?
With non-electronic records? No. Not that I've seen.
Senator Olson.
And Madam Chair, just to follow that up, I guess I would just say, from what I understand, it's been, I don't do this anymore, so I don't have a personal stake in this. It's been a few years since I've been doing this, and I know a lot has changed in practice in the last few years. But it always was the case with paper records that you'd have some duplication, and nobody got real excited about it, however, because it wasn't nearly to the degree that it's become with electronic records. You also would get things, you know, a lot of information on one page, as opposed to what seems to be the case for a lot electronic medical records, which is the situation where you've got a line on a page. You know, it doesn't matter, because when you're storing them electronically, the space involved is, or the cost of printing or paper, is not an issue. It only becomes an issue for the person that has to pay for it, can't look at it electronically, can't get a copy electronically, but has to get all this paper printed in order to even figure out what they needed or didn't need, and you know, how. And so the way it's being stored, and it has greatly compounded this problem, and wasn't something that was contemplated when the law was drafted. So that's the reason why we want to encourage people to get copies of records electronically as soon as possible. It will save a lot of time and cost on both ends.
So, Senator Betzel?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. from my experiences, I've been for over 30 years working in the mental health area, and virtually all the major hospitals in the metro area and outstate, I've seen various practices and differences. It used to be, you know, for the current active file, the patients in the hospital, they have a 3-ring binder, And those were the papers that were in that three-ring binder were the current chart. And then if it was a closed chart, they'd have some files somewhere in the medical record. And you could actually count the number of pages and look at them. And sometimes there were duplicate pages, but not often. Most hospitals that I've seen use a program called EPIC, E-P-I-C. And even though it's the same program in various hospitals, the policies differ from one hospital to another as to what you're going to see. Now, in every instance, I'm authorized to see the records because I've got a court order because the hospital started the proceeding. I've got an order signed by a judge saying I can see the records. Some hospitals let me see it and some won't, even though it's their own case and the judge signed the order. Okay, but when I can sit down at the records and sit at the computer, if they find a terminal that I can sit at, and allow me to do that, I mean, I can kind of scroll through and say, okay, this is important to the case, that's not important, so forth. But then the hospital is ordered by the court to come up with a set of paper records, and when we show up, typically what you see there is what we get nowadays. And there is a lot of duplication. If the doctor indicates on day one, you know, here's the diagnosis and so forth and like that, and if there's somebody who writes a progress note, then there's going to be another set of pages with the original doctor's notes plus the updates. And then if there's another update to that, then you're going to get the original doctor's note plus the updates plus the updates. And as I say, in my particular instance, it doesn't matter because the hospital has to provide those records to the court. But you're spending a lot of time trying to read through these paper records simply because that is how the computer program seems to generate the records. It can't segregate the stuff out into the individual stuff that you can see on the screen and say, I want that, but I don't want that. When you say I want paper records, somehow it merges it all together. Now, I think the technology exists that if we could get the hospitals to understand this, and I mean, if somebody came in with a flash drive and said, okay, download it, do that, you're still going to get some resistance, but at least there's ways you can get around it right now. But I think it's more of a problem with the policies of the hospitals as to what they think you can see and what they can't see, and then a problem I see with the program, and I'm interested in see if the witness would agree with that just the program just seems to generate all this junk that even if, say, I don't want that, it seems to just generate it anyway. So it isn't a matter of the lawyer saying, you know, this is what I want. That's how it just seems to spit out of the computer and out of the printer.
Mr. Essie, given the Senator Betzel's comments and the language in line 2.14 through 2.17 with respect to electronic records, will that help take care of your issue with respect to electronic records and the wastefulness that's generated in your paper copy or the cost associated? I guess until the programs have been addressed in a way that doesn't consolidate all the information, spit it out, at least you could address the cost piece. Will that take care of the cost aspect of it for you?
It will. If we are able to review records electronically as they are stored, that would certainly take care of the challenge that we have in having electronic records duplicated. If they can just, you know, when we asked for copies of x-rays, we get CDs of x-rays. We don't get films anymore. It would appear to me that the same could hold true for the medical records. They could put it on a CD for us, and we would pay the retrieval fee for the CD.
Good.
And the problems would appear to be solved.
Anything else? Any other input you want to give us on the bill?
The only other thing is that some companies do get carried away with retrieval fees. We have been known to pay $45 and $55 to facilities to be told that they have no records. That seems to be an unfairness. And now, Mr. Sinus.
Mr. Sinus? Senator Limmer.
on that point, is it because they've employed someone to go down to the archives and dig through a stack of boxes and then come back? Is there a legitimate cost to that search, even though there may not be records?
Madam Chair,
Mr. Rossi?
Senator, I believe that we have been told that they are just looking at them electronically. I don't know that anyone has informed us that they have had to dig through boxes.
The other question I did have while I've got the floor on this is, when you request electronic records, do you need a particular software platform in your computer to read it, or is it universally applied? Is it like a Word file and anyone can get a copy of it, or does it come from a specific software package at let's say, a medical facility, and then it's transferred to you? Do you need to have a corresponding platform computer program to read it and
Madam Chair, Senator, I wish I knew. I don't know the answer to that. That would be left to our computer people.
And the reason I ask that is it's one thing for an attorney's office to request electronic records if they had the software, but if an individual wants to have an electronic copy, does the individual have to have some special hardware on their computer to print it or to store it?
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, although I'm hardly an expert in this, I think I can address that just to the degree that we, all of us, have general knowledge when it comes to this kind of thing. I mean, there are lots of different formats, as we all know, for opening documents and reading them. And typically, there'll be a piece of software, if it's in a format that you don't have on your computer, where you basically have to convert it to a different format. Mm-hmm. And that isn't, that's done all the time, where you've got to convert from one format to the other. And it would seem to me that it would make a lot more sense to do it on the end of, if we want to make patients be able to read their medical records or get copies or have access to the medical records, that we would want to, first of all, encourage hospitals to have software that people could look at and read and get into, whether it's for this purpose or just general public purposes. But if that requires a conversion, then it would be simply a matter on that end of just being able to convert it as it goes through the process of coming out, you know.
Mm-hmm. Senator Betzel.
And just, Ms. Carusi, I shared my experiences, but are you aware of what programs the hospitals you've worked with or seen? I mentioned the EPIC program. I don't know if there's other programs out there. That's the one that I've seen the most of. Are there programs that you're aware of?
Madam Chair, Senator Batesell, I do not know off the top of my head different programs that hospitals or facilities are using.
Okay.
Mr. Essie, in the work that you do, what percentage of the requests for records you make is in the form for electronic, and what percentage is in the form of paper copies because it's not electronically available?
Madam Chair, any records that are maintained electronically, we would prefer to receive electronically. So it would depend on the facility that we are requesting from. If they maintain electronic records, then we would request that we receive the records in the way that they are maintained. But it would depend on the sophistication of the facility.
Let me re-ask that question. In your current practice, if you were to take the total universe of the work that you currently, that you're involved in, what percentage of it would you say comes back to you in electronic format, and what percentage of it is in paper format?
Madam Chair, I would say perhaps 75%
electronic
of the records are electronic records, and I would say that perhaps 25%, and that may be smaller clinics, do not have electronic records. That's just a rough estimate.
Madam Chair, though, just to,
Senator Olson,
to clarify your question, I believe, and I'd like Ms. Teresi to correct me if I'm wrong, that you're not getting any of them in an electronic format, though.
No.
They're only being maintained like 75% in electronic format. But right now the facilities are refusing to provide any of them in an electronic format, even where that capability exists.
Is that true, Ms. Teresi?
Madam Chair, it is true. I have yet to receive medical records in an electronic format.
X-rays are CDs in CD format, but not the medical records itself.
Correct, Madam Chair.
And what's the rationale for that? That you've made the request.
Correct.
The response has come back to say
it isn't possible.
It's not possible. And just want to clarify that. not possible from the perspective that the programs that they have doesn't allow the information to be downloaded in a digestible format, or not possible because they just don't want to give it to you in an electronic format, but you know that it's doable.
Madam Chair, I don't know the reasons. All I know is that we have been told that it is not possible to receive them in an electronic format, and it's also not possible for us to review them at their facilities electronically. If we want to review them at their facilities rather than pay the cost of $30,000 for records, they will print them off and have us review stacks and stacks of records versus having them even reviewed electronically. I don't know the rationale.
How do they review their own paper?
Of course they can.
Senator Olson?
And Madam Chair, just based on going a little bit farther and having the people there, I'm not sure that the people who were at my meeting yesterday were really the people who work in this department, but they represented these facilities. And I think we all agreed that a trip to the actual copying location would probably shed some light as far as all of us were concerned. However, that being said, it's obvious that the facilities themselves can review the records and look at them. Otherwise, they, you know, wouldn't be storing them that way. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to say they can't be viewed because they're viewing them. The second thing I was told is that at least a couple people there said they thought that the earlier versions of software would not allow something to be printed. Again, I don't understand that, but assuming that that's true, the later versions of software, however, will allow things to be printed electronically. So, you know, that was the information that I had.
Well, I'm sure the industry is here and the hospitals are here. So we'll hopefully when you all come up to speak, you'll address that. The series of questions we've asked, if you could address that, that would be great. Mr. Sinus?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senators, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Tom Sinus, and I am an attorney at the law firm of Robbins, Kaplan, Miller, and Cerisi. I am also a member and sit on the Board of Governors for the Minnesota Association for Justice. The issue before you today, the cost of obtaining medical records, may seem relatively small compared to the challenges before the legislature and the people of this state. But I submit to you that it is not a small issue. Rather, it is and continues to be an obstacle for those Minnesotans who are victims of wrongdoing. And I hope that myself and my colleague can provide you some background on understanding how the cost of those medical records is an obstacle for the people of this state. Almost without exception, every Minnesotan who is injured as a result of wrongdoing has a story to tell. And much of that story is contained in their medical records. It doesn't matter whether the citizen is a victim of careless driving, a defective product, or a collapsing bridge. The stories of what has happened to them are in their medical records. And so when those victims seek out counsel to help them learn their stories, to tell their stories, to investigate what has happened, and in many cases, to help them assert their rights in court, counsel working on behalf of those citizens has to obtain those medical records. The cost of those records is making it increasingly difficult for counsel to assist the people of this state in that process. Imagine, for example, the Minnesotan who was hit by a drunk driver. She spends a few weeks in the hospital. We've seen here that this is 4 days. She's injured, but not catastrophically so. After she gets out of the hospital, she seeks the help of an attorney in rural Minnesota who may practice alone or may practice with one or two other attorneys. And she and the attorney agree, as is customary throughout the practice of law, almost throughout the state, that she will have to pay the cost of obtaining these records out of whatever recovery she receives. Now, the attorney makes a request from the hospital to get complete copies of the medical records, and the attorney's told that the cost of getting those records is $5,000. The woman understands that $5,000 is likely to be a substantial portion of any recovery that she receives. And so she makes the decision not to pursue her claim. And so the doors for justice are closed for that woman. Imagine, for example, another Minnesotan, a young man who is catastrophically injured. He seeks out an attorney, and he and his attorney prevail in obtaining justice and providing financial resources that he needs for his future. But before he can put that money to good use in obtaining those resources, he has to pay the cost of obtaining that justice, which means he has to pay the cost of obtaining his medical records. And those costs will likely include for him, particularly someone who's catastrophically injured, thousands and thousands of dollars to reimburse for paper copies of electronic medical records. And so, Madam Chair, what these examples illustrate, it is my hope that what they illustrate is that the exorbitant cost of reproducing these medical records is not being borne by attorneys, but it is being paid by the citizens of this state. They're either paying those costs directly out of their own pocket, or they're paying them indirectly by deciding not to pursue a claim on their own behalf because of the prohibitively high cost of records. I think we all agree that we have a healthcare crisis in this country and that we are all working to resolve that. And in light of that crisis, we have seen everyone from the federal to the state level embrace the idea of electronic medical records as a way to bring down healthcare costs. But the irony of the electronic medical records system is that it is increasing the costs to the citizens of this state in obtaining justice. And so I would urge the members of this committee to approve a bill that makes the cost of obtaining medical records more reasonable and more affordable for the citizens of this state, and makes it more reasonable and more affordable for those citizens who are victims of wrongdoing to obtain justice.
Mr. Sinus, in the work that you've done, have you come across any rationale, a legal rationale, for why hospitals would be so protective of the records, whether it's from a privacy standpoint or otherwise?
Madam Chair, I haven't come across a situation where hospitals are, and I make sure I understand your question, but I haven't come across the situation where they're overly protective. Hospitals have to and do provide records to citizens or people acting on their behalf of copies of their records. So it isn't so much been a problem in terms of getting someone to agree to give you the record as they're required to do, but it is the problem of the cost to the citizen when this is 4 days. For someone who's been catastrophically injured, 4 days is just a brief speck of time. And so you can see how $1,200 quickly can become $10,000.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sinus, I'm not familiar with this MAJ group. Is this a trial lawyer association? Could you give me a little background of who you're speaking on behalf of?
Sure.
Mr. Sinus.
Madam Chair and Senator, the Minnesota Association for Justice is an organization of attorneys in this state who represent people who have been injured as a result of wrongdoing. That may be people who have been injured by defective products, or people who have been injured in car accidents. It also includes attorneys who represent people in workers' comp areas, and it includes other areas of the law, too, family law, criminal attorneys. They are attorneys who practice in areas of law that involve a substantial amount of trial work. A substantial majority of our members represent people who have been injured or victims one way or another of someone's wrongful conduct, and majority of us do civil trial work.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Limmer,
the only reason I'm raising this, I just want to know where you're coming from.
Sure.
And in your organization, would you have any, let's say, corporate attorneys that would represent defendants in the MAJ membership?
Mr. Sinus.
Madam Chair, Senator, in our organization, the answer, Senator, I think is no, but I want to make an important point. The cost of obtaining medical records is not just a cost that is borne by the citizens that we represent, but it is also the cost borne by defendants or any other, or corporations or any other individual or entity who is represented. Because it is customary in the legal profession that when a client when an attorney acting on a client's behalf does something like obtain records, and there's a cost associated with that, a cost separate and apart from the attorney's attorney fee, that that client pays those costs. And so that client could be one of my clients, or it could be a corporate client, or it could be anyone in this state. And so anyone who is involved in any kind of legal matter that involves an injury of any kind, whether you be on one side of the V or the other, is bearing the cost of these medical records.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lamar.
This bill seems to, or these ideas are, and this discussion is probably an outcome of the history of where medical records have come from over the years. Moving from the old shoebox philosophy where you're collecting just scraps of paper, then going into a more cataloged system, then getting to an electronic system. Now we're trying to require every medical facility to have some type of electronic method, and then now to have it communicate between systems, not only with the state government, but also with other medical facilities. And a book that you have there is somewhat representative not only of a patient, but it's also representative of kind of the history of why we collect the records that we do. And I would tend to think it not only is for the betterment of the patient, but it's also, in a way, a corporate defense in order to keep a clear record of what goes on with the patient in the event that there is a question about, oh, medical malpractice or other questions that may come up regarding the health or the record of the patient in the care of some medical facility. And so we've kind of created our own problem here. We meaning those of us in government who want to make sure that records are kept securely, those medical facilities that want to have an easy transfer for the betterment of their patients so that they can quickly communicate about the background of medical patients. And yet at the same time, now we're trying to streamline it, I'm assuming, through this type of discussion in order that the communication not only is effective within a facility, but also as universally applied as possible, even to the extent for a potential lawsuit. Am I kind of encapsulating a brief history of why we're at this point now?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Sinus.
Senator, I think that's probably fair, although I'll profess not to necessarily be a historian on the topic. Certainly medical records are maintained as both an important chronology of what has happened for a particular individual and also what has happened at a particular institution. And I don't think there's anybody who disagrees that we should have complete and accurate documentation on for anyone involved. The problem we're having now is that the transition to electronic medical records and the way that the current statute is written there is a miscommunication between the reality of that transition between electronic records and the high cost of reproducing those records as it currently exists in the statute. And so I don't think anybody, certainly not at this table, is suggesting that we move away from wanting to maintain complete and accurate records for a patient. But for those patients that want to obtain their records, when this is the only way it can be provided and when they're being charged what they've been charged, it's just not a fair cost for those individuals to bear themselves.
Very good. Mr. Sinus, anything else, you and Ms. Teresa?
I don't believe so, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Madam Chair,
Senator Olson?
I have some comments and questions for these witnesses,
too. Oh, very good.
Okay. And I guess, Madam Chair, you know, just getting into this issue now of the cost, I believe that these witnesses have some personal experience with things that would be probably more up to date than my experience. But I'd like to be able to preface my question a bit just by sharing the concerns specifically related to costs and being able to get some feedback. The But before I begin then, I just wanted to also make a comment to Senator Limmer with regard to his point. You know, I do think the point that he makes is a valid one, but it's sort of a different issue than or I guess to me it underscores the need for this legislation. We have evolved because we have the technology to do that. And at both the federal and state level, we're trying to use that technology in a way to make the cost of doing business in the arena of healthcare as inexpensive as we possibly can. When we have one particular area for one small group of people that is unjustifiably expensive, in other words, it's a lot more expensive than the actual cost of reproducing these records would justify, then you end up with costs, not only a profit motive to prevent change, to make it less expensive because someone's making money on it, but you also end up with an extra cost that's built into the system that doesn't need to be there.
But Senator Olson, I don't know that that's the conclusion, right? I mean, I think you're drawing a conclusion. The reason why we're all here at the table is that your bill, the basis for your bill and the rationale for your bill is that you believe that it is unjustifiably costly and that there might be some profit incentives. But the reason why we're having this discussion is that I think during the legislative session when we had the discussion, the industry came to speak and they said, no, there's some reasons for why we do that. And so part of the conversation is to make that determination,
right,
that we're at this hearing to try to make that determination, not that that's already a foregone conclusion coming into the conversation.
Well, and Madam Chair, to that point, I guess that's why I wanted to get into that a bit with these witnesses, because my understanding is that the cost. I'll just go back and ask. First of all, Ms. Teresi, when you received that retrieval charge for, I think you said it was $55 without getting any records at all, was that coming back from the same facility? And are you aware of what the law says is allowed to be charged as a retrieval fee?
Ms. Teresi?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we are aware of what the law does say can be charged, and when we get bills like this, we do go back to the facility and ask them why they've charged such a fee. And I do not think in this instance that we did have to pay the fee. I think we challenged it. But this isn't the only instance when a facility has asked for that type of fee.
Mr. Essay, how often do you challenge a fee coming to you?
Madam Chair, I do not handle all of the bills for all of the medical record requests that come into our firm.
So in your...
I don't know the answer to that, but anything like this that seems way out of sync with what is justifiably allowed under the law is challenged.
And Ms. Teresi, what would be the... What is the usual response that you will get? Is it generally there's a sense of courtesy where, yeah, we'll knock it down some, or is it an absolutely no, or what's customary, in the practice when you've gone back to challenge a bill like that?
If we can, Madam Chair, if we can work with somebody and tell them that we think that it is unfair, I think that perhaps 50% of the time.
Okay.
We are successful in adjusting the bill. However, there are some facilities that will not.
Fair enough. Thank you. Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Teresi, I guess the point I just wanted to make for the people who in this room who aren't aware of that, the amount that's could you tell us the amount that's supposed to be charged for a retrieval fee under law?
Ms. Teresi?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I believe it is $16.
And so, Ms. Teresi, when you were getting a bill for $55, was that bill coming from the same facility and divided basically between departments within the same facility? Is that why it was so much, or don't you know?
Ms. Teresi?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, this was from one facility. The bill that I brought with, it was from one facility for one person's pharmacy records.
Senator Olson?
Okay. And Madam Chair, is it common practice, or do you often see multiplication of that $16 fee or facilities within one, the same facility, kind of multiplying that retrieval fee so that it becomes more than the amount that's stated in the statute?
Mr. Essie?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I am not familiar with getting multiple retrieval fees within the same facilities. It's not been in my experience.
Okay. So,
Senator Olson?
So, Madam Chair, you don't get a different retrieval fee, like, say, for billing records or physical therapy records or whatever within the same facility? You get those all under one retrieval fee in your practice?
Ms. Teresi?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, to be fair, I do not get all of the bills coming across my desk.
Okay.
So I don't have firsthand knowledge of all of that information. We do have somebody within our firm that handles all of those bills.
Senator Olson?
Okay. Ms. Teresi or Ms. Sinus, or Mr. Sinus, are either of you familiar with one of the things that I experienced, Madam Chair, in my practice in discussing this situation, which was concerning to people who are representing, as for the reasons that have been explained by Mr. Sinus, is that often there is a contract when it isn't done internally for the company that's coming in and doing the medical records copying to agree that they will provide copies to everyone else who wants their medical records at no charge. And sometimes they're even paying a fee to the hospital just for locating the business within the hospital. And yet are still for-profit companies making money and copying the firm, making the copies. Do you know anything about that, or is that not something that you have any familiarity with?
Mr. Sinus?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I don't think we have familiarity with that in the sense that everything we work on, we're always being charged. So we've never been on the receiving side of a no charge.
Okay.
So it's sort of why we're here today. So I don't think I can speak to that, and I would guess Ms. Teresi probably not as either. But
okay. Well,
Mr. Stein, so you're the lawyer. The law says $16 for retrieval fee. Your billed $55. Do you go back and challenge that?
Well, as I think it helps understand it, Madam Chair, that in our office, our lawyers and our nurses and our staff, we all are working together on obtaining medical records and paying the invoices for the medical records. So as Ms. Teresi explained, when we get a charge we believe is unreasonable, we have staff in our office that help us go back to the facility and challenge those charges where we deem that it's appropriate to challenge those. So, yes, we do that. I will tell you, though, Madam Chair, that I don't do that personally in my day-to-day practice. That is why I have the privilege of working with good people that help us manage our medical records because, as you can imagine, if this is 4 days for one client, it takes a lot of manpower, and I have the privilege of working in a law firm that has those resources, but it takes a lot of resources to just deal with medical records. So I, as the attorney, am not necessarily dealing with each invoice as it comes in, but we have...
Mr. Essie, do you go back and challenge the $16 supposedly legal fee, but it's now 50 retrieval fee, but now it's $55? Do you usually go back and challenge that?
Madam Chair, we have an assistant who deals only with medical records and obtaining medical records, and yes, she does go back to challenge. And when she can negotiate, she does. There are some facilities that will tell us that if we don't, that they are not going to work with us, they will not reduce their fees, and then we will just pay it.
Very good. Thank you. Senator Olson.
And, Madam Chair, just following on that point, there is an article that I think explains probably why. And, again, in my experience, it was common practice to see these duplication of fees. And, if there isn't an argument against that, or we don't think that should happen, the language in here will clarify that that shouldn't continue to happen. But whether it's this issue of duplicating retrieval fees or anything else with regard to charges, the cost involved when the cost involved of litigating this issue is often a lot more expensive than the cost of simply paying the cost of getting the fees. And especially when there's a time sensitivity involved in getting the information in order to be able to go ahead, the cost of litigating this when you have a medical facility that simply says this is the way we do business and we're not going to change it, because I've had many of those phone calls with medical facilities over the years. Sometimes they're willing to work with you, as was said, especially when you point them to a very specific law. Other times it's just the way it's done and everybody's doing it, and that's the kind of answer that you get.
Mr. Sinus, have you ever, or Mr. Teresi, have you ever lodged a complaint against an entity that you know is only supposed to be charging $16 but continuously charges $55 and in a way kind of coercing you to pay more than what you think you should be paying?
Madam Chair, I am not aware of any complaint that we've lodged as a firm.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Anything else, Senator Olson?
Not at this time, Madam Chair.
Thank you. You're going to be around for a little bit, right? Because we might come back to you for some other questions. So, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Stout? Ms. Stout, we've had a very interesting conversation. And you've heard all the questions that have been asked, and I hope that as you do your presentation, you will incorporate some, reflect in your comments, answers to some of the questions that were asked by the members of the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name is Susan Stout. I represent the Minnesota Hospital Association. I do have a couple of handouts that I'd like to just hand up to the committee here. I'm not going to go through the handouts in detail, but I wanted to try to help you understand sort of the process as we view it in obtaining and verifying records. I think I'm going to start by saying that when we saw this legislation last session, we went back to our hospitals and asked the question, what are you charging for records? We wanted to get some sense of what the average charges are. And what we found is that the average charge in 2009 ranged between $25 and $150 for a medical record. We also learned, as we talked with our members, and I didn't know this being a lobbyist, I don't deal with medical records much, but I learned as I talked with our members that we provide a medical record, a copy for a patient free of charge. So if a patient, if you were to call the hospital and say, you know, I'm going to go to another hospital or I'd like a copy of my record, we make that record free of charge for the patient. When we charge for medical records, we charge, when we get these attorney's requests, we charge according to the law. And the law obviously has a fee structure set up that was, it's my understanding that fee structure was set up after a study was done by the health department in the early 90s. I will tell you that one of the things that we've heard is that our fee structure is out of line with other states. So we did, I believe this is a Westlaw search of all the states and what they charge in those states for medical records. And I didn't make extra copies, but I'm happy to pass it up and the staff can make copies for everyone here. I'll tell you that as I've I've moved through this document, I find that a number of states have a variety of fees, from what they call a basic charge to a retrieval fee to a certification fee, and then a per-page fee. A number of the states charge a different rate depending upon the number of pages that you request. So one state, for example, charges $20 for the first 10 pages, and then from 11 to 20 they charge $30, and on and on. So the fee structures seem to be really widely varying from state to state. So we had hoped that when we looked at this, we'd be able to grid it out easily and say, okay, here's what all 50 states charge. Where are we in the queue, so to speak? And it is really all over the map and very difficult to figure out. One thing that is clear as I look through here, a number of states charge everyone, patients, for their medical records in addition to attorneys. Minnesota is one of those states where we provide a free record for patients. I will pass that up because I'd... Great, thank you. I want you to have that background information.
Ms. Stout?
Yes.
The free record that you provide to the patient, is that just the record that's generated at the specific facility, or does that also include records that comes from other facilities that has now been made in part and parcel of that, the total records at the particular facility?
That's a good question. I'm going to get some help here from my friends. Do we know? Does that include everything?
It depends on what the authorization.
Why don't you come up to the table, because I need you on the record.
Sure.
My name is Diane Larson. I'm the past president of the Minnesota Health Information Management Association. And there, if a patient came into most organizations to request a copy of their medical record, they would receive the medical record of that particular facility. Unless they requested additional information from the other facilities. And in that case, I believe most facilities would provide them that information. Now, I don't know that for a fact, but that is my understanding. And we term that redisclosure. Now, we're just talking about the patient. We aren't talking about attorneys or other people.
Correct. That was my question.
Okay.
That was my question. So you don't know. You don't know what the practice is. It may differ from facility to facility.
It would differ from facility to facility is correct.
Senator Olson?
And Madam Chair, again, I'd go back to the point that I made earlier about the flip side of the coin, but I think the answer illustrates where the problem has lied. It's not, well, it has been practice for facilities to only give their own records, and I would assert, and I know this from personal experience with a lot of facilities, even if the person asks, there is a refusal often to give records from other facilities. There's also a different standard using for giving these records, whether it's the person there to look at them for their own doctor as opposed to for their lawyer, even though there's nothing in the law to support that use of a different standard. The form is supposed to be control, and when a person asks for all their records, they're supposed to get all their records, and it's really not up to the facility to be deciding which ones they're going to give them and which ones they aren't. However, to the extent that it isn't made very clear on the authorization what the patient's requesting, that's where I would submit we can do some work to make it clear to protect the facilities so that they don't have to worry that they're not, you know, that they're giving something that they shouldn't be giving or that the person wasn't aware that they were asking for their entire record.
And I agree with Senator Olson.
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chairman. And that is an area that we could provide additional clarification. There's no question about that. But the reason for not redisclosing to attorneys, to non-patients, is the authorization is an informed consent document. And the patient oftentimes doesn't know what's included in that medical record. So when additional facility's information is incorporated into that medical record, they might not know that. So for us to redisclose that information without the patient's knowledge calls into question what the patient consented to the release of.
And Madam Chair?
Senator Olson?
This is kind of exactly what I was getting at when I referenced the fact, and I thought it was a very interesting discussion we had, that apparently behind the scenes, regardless of what's in the law, a practice has developed in Minnesota that's kind of followed by people doing this business and talking to each other, where they've determined that this is going to be in the best interests of patients because they may not know something, so they're not going to give them these records thinking, or as I heard someone say, well, why does the lawyer really need to see that? These records don't even relate to that accident. Well, on the one hand, I could go through and explain why the lawyer, in fact, does need to see those records because there are legal requirements for disclosure when we do discovery where you have to give all this information. The person has to sign it. Some things you may not have to give, but the lawyer has to be able then to object to those questions, so they have to see the records to be able to object. But that really kind of is beside the point, because the fact is if the person has asked for it or asked that it be given to their legal representative's office, they have that right. That's the flip side of the coin. You can't limit access that isn't allowed by law to be limited. But we do have to make sure that it's clear that this is what they're asking for.
Ms. Stout?
Madam Chair, this sort of brings you right directly to this handout. I think that while we agree that there's a lot of variation with regard to how some of these things are handled, we also agree that there might be some benefit to working on some standardization. And we're willing to do that. We think that it would benefit everybody if there was some standardization. I think that when you see differences from one facility to another in terms of how they handle the redisclosure of data that they've received from, say, a clinic. Let's say you've got a medical record in the hospital, but you've gotten a clinic record sent over to the hospital, and they're trying to decide whether that gets disclosed. The reason that we end up with some variations there are because the hospital medical records people are trying to apply the various laws that govern the disclosure of data. And as you can see from this handout, the numbers of statutes that relate to data are fairly lengthy, and they're both state and federal law. And each facility tries to interpret the best they can what they should do. And that's why you see some variation. I think that there would be some value in sitting down and working together on a standardized way of responding so we as an industry can handle things, everybody the same way. That would make a lot of sense. What I believe to be true is that the clerks that work in the medical records departments and the medical records professionals that are going through these records are doing their level best to try to figure out how to get to the patient the information that they want and need in the best way that they can. We are in an odd position now. We are transitioning from paper record time to an all-electronic record time. And all the hospitals are in varying places in that transition. And unfortunately, the way medical records have been designed and the purpose of medical records has driven us to this place where there is duplication in the record. And just to help you to understand that a little bit, you need to understand that when you design an electronic medical record, there are various users throughout the hospital that have to look at that record for different reasons. There's the physicians that have access because they want to look at the record to provide care, to provide consultation. There's the pharmacy department, the nursing staff, a variety of folks throughout the facility that need to look at the record. And sometimes the way the programming is designed, it will pull pertinent information into another portion of the record so that when you look at it, you can see everything that you need to see in one spot for a physician, for example, so that the physician doesn't have to flip among 25 different screens to get at all the consultation data. That creates some duplication in the record. And that there's the rub. That creates, when you then hit the print key, you want to print out the entire record, you may end up with something in two different spots in that record. That's because the record was designed for clinical purposes, not for the purposes of making copies for those folks who ask for copies. It was designed to make clinical decision-making easy and to make sure that a certain practitioner, when they have their eyes on the record in a certain place, the right things pop up for them to see so that they don't make medical errors. And those are the sort of the technical reasons that we've evolved into this odd place. Now, the good news is that by 2015, we have a goal in statute for the entire state to be up on electronic medical records. That includes physician clinics, all the healthcare system, and we are marching quickly toward that date. The Minnesota Department of Health has been working with providers to try to get as much standardization and to try to meet those interoperability standards as well, which means that what we're trying to do is get all of our records to be able to talk to each other. I know it sounds simple in the world of technology for a computer note written by a physician at Abbott Northwestern to be looked at by a physician at Mesabi, Fairview Hospital, and Hibbing. But it is a challenge to go to a completely interoperable record. And that's really where we are. We're in that transition phase. So right now what happens when we get a request for a medical record is that more than likely a big chunk of the record is going to be electronic. There are going to be parts of the record, however, that are still going to be on a paper format in a file somewhere. And there might be parts that are in various types of electronic formats because as we've transitioned through the years, some facilities that were early adopters and started to get things electronic maybe moved to a new system. So they have things in various different formats along the line. And what the medical records people have to do, and the challenge for them, is to pull that all together somehow into a cohesive package, make sure that it's all there, certify it, and get it out to the people who request. They handle thousands and thousands of requests. The requests that were discussed earlier from the Kaplan, Miller, and Cerisi group, I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the testifier, that's just a small subset of the medical record requests that we get. There are thousands and thousands more requests beyond that. And in fact, what I keep hearing from our medical records people is that those large requests, those records that are five banker boxes full, are kind of outliers. Most everything are really pretty manageable records, and they go out to people in a quickly and at a very affordable price. Our goal, obviously, is to make this as simple as possible. We don't want to spend a ton of time doing a lot of medical record handling because that's time taken away from providing patient care, which is really what we're supposed to be doing with our time.
But Ms. Stout, first of all, I mean, this graph for me is astounding that you have to draw a graph with this many multi-dimensions to be able to show us the process that you use to meet the request for medical records. So we'll come back to this. But what I don't understand is if everything is in electronic format form, why can't you provide it in an electronic format form without printing off banker boxes of the record that are in duplications?
We can, Madam Chair, we can, if the facility has the ability in their programming to copy it onto a disk. I think what we mentioned to Senator Olson is that we will do that. But most of the programming out there does not allow us to do that. It just isn't sophisticated enough on that end. We've focused all our programming efforts on the sharing of data internally with clinicians, and we just haven't gotten to that place in those systems yet where you can take your jump drive and plug it in and download. We'd like to get there. We're just not there yet.
And, Madam Chair, if I could respond to that.
Ms. Larson?
I think people's misconception about the print function for an electronic medical record is that you use the Microsoft print function, that you just or transfer to a jump drive or whatever, and that entire assembly of medical record documents and information just transfers over. It doesn't work that way. A person has to go in and module by module transfer that information, just like you would with separate files that you would attach. So it's not a gathering of all of the information and with one click, computer click, that everything transfers. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
But Ms. Larson, that's my point exactly, is that if you are already going module by module and putting it somewhere, then why can't you module by module make that an electronic
transfer
product?
Over to a CD? I believe most facilities can do that. Some cannot, but I do believe most facilities can. And we had this discussion with Senator Olson.
But Ms. Larson, I just had two testifiers here saying that currently they're not able to get anything in electronic format from any of the facilities. I mean, are they not giving me the full story, or is that not the practice?
I don't know. I don't know. I can't respond to... It might
How
be
about in your experience in the hospitals that you represent or associate with, how many of those institutions currently do provide electronic records in this format, module by module, into one electronic record? They do provide it if attorneys request it.
And I think... I would have to say that it would be a minority of the hospitals, certainly not the majority.
Well, this committee certainly would be interested in hearing what percentage of the facilities do provide it electronically and what percentages do not. Because what I'm hearing is contrary to what Ms. Stout is saying. I mean, if you have the capacity to modulate it, and if you want to rationalize the charge to the time it takes to go in and grab each record to modulate it, and you have the capacity, then you have the capacity to generate an electronic version of that. Why can't that be provided as a retrieval for the request? Ms. Stout?
Madam Chair, it's my understanding, and I think that in order to be fair to our electronic, IT teams, I should get them to come and meet with you, and we'd be happy to do that. It's my understanding that it's the downloading print function onto a disk that's readable that they don't have the capability to do, that they have the capability to print module by module, but downloading it onto something that can be handed over and can be read by another entity isn't there yet. That's my understanding. Now, if I'm wrong, I will certainly come back and correct myself to you, and I will go back and check. I believe that what they're doing is using the electronic system to generate on paper the record because that's what they can do. I don't believe that they're doing it because they're trying to generate some kind of copying fee, because, to be honest with you, it's not what we're in the business of doing. I talked to St. Luke's Hospital in Duluth as an example. I asked them specifically, for the last full year that you have data, how much did you bill out in medical record copying? It was $118,000. I asked them, what were their costs? They had a clerical person at $15 an hour and a medical records manager. And between their salaries and their benefits, it was $97,000. The printing cost was about $10,000 over the year. There's no profit here. They spent out in salary what they did. The question is, can we figure out a way to do it more efficiently? And I'm told that right now we're doing the best that we can. We'd be happy to go back and double check and see if there's any way that we can increase and ramp up the capacity to print it off onto a jump drive or a CD that somebody else can read. And if we can, I think what we told Senator Olson last night was, if we can do that, if our programming will allow us to do it in a format that somebody else can stick it in their machine and read, we'll do that. We will provide that data.
Senator Betzel?
Madam Chair, one of the things that we heard from the earlier testimony was the fact that they couldn't even see the records at some places. And it's difficult to even know what you want until you can see them. I think the technology is there to be able to download the things and so forth. But I think that the practices vary from hospital to hospital as to what they think they can disclose, what they think they can allow, which is, I think, what's driving some of it. We dealt with this issue last session. Just since May, in my own practice, okay, now I deal in a very specialized practice where I do have access to medical records, electronic records, but I have a statute that tells me I get access to the records. I have a court order that allows me access to the records, so I don't have some of the obstacles that the previous witnesses had. And I'll name names here. Hennepin County Medical Center is very good. I show up there and I say, okay, I want to see the records, and they've given me a username, I've got a password. All they have to do is send an email. Somebody has to log on there. And I say, here's who I want to see, here's the records I want to see, and here's, I've got the proof that I'm representing this individual. They can send an email to my account, and then I can sit down at the nurse's station, I can log on to Epic, I can look at all the records I want to see, I can see everything. That's in Hennepin County Medical Center. I go to North Memorial. They can't do it. It's impossible. They have no place for me to look at the records, but I have to call in for an appointment. For a case that they filed, and I have be in court in 2 days from now. And I say, okay, how do you want me to handle this? You want me to subpoena your medical records person to come down and bring the records to court, and you can sit there and watch me read them? Or do you want me to just object to the records on the case that you filed when I've got a statute and a court order allowing me to see it? Well, then they back off, and then after about a half an hour, they'll bring me down to medical records, they'll sit me down at some place, and then I can look at the records. Same type of law, same type of case, two different ways of two hospitals looking at it. Abbott Northwestern Hospital, Station 47, Station 48. I go to Station 47. They've already got the records printed up for me. Here you go. I go to 48, and they say, we're not allowed to show you anything. Two different parallel units next door to each other, different policies within the same hospital. Mercy Medical Center, they'll let me sit down, look at the chart right there on the computer. They'll just log in and say, here, sit down, take a look at it. University of Minnesota Medical Center, Fairview, they're just brand new. You know, they're just converting over. They don't even know what the policy is. The problem is it varies from hospital to hospital to hospital. There's absolutely no consistency, but the policy seems to be, no, you can't see it. And this is for probably one of the easiest access to medical records you've got in my area. I can't even imagine for the client who's going to hire an attorney. And so I think the hospitals really have to get their act together. First of all, are you going to let the people see it when the patient authorizes the records or not? And I think the technology is there today to transfer, to download the electronic records. Now, you know, if this is the way the hospitals want to do it, and we have to force you to say, okay, you're going to pay, 5 cents per page because you're not going to use the technology there and let the people who are authorized to see it, that's fine. But I see a lot of resistance with the hospitals right now, just in my own area. And so I'm getting frustrated that they're not doing what they should be doing.
Senator Olson? Madam Chair, I'd just like to follow that statement. And I don't know that we're going to get to the bottom of this. We can't vote today anyway. But I would like to say, and I don't see him here today, but there's a gentleman I've talked to a couple times in the last week who represented a business from out east. And a little bit different than what Ms. Stout said, he told me in my initial conversation with him that they opposed my bill because Minnesota was one of the two highest charging states by far. And a little different again than what Ms. Stout said, if you actually go through, and I've given you the comparisons that I have from the same print download, they all are all over the board, but one thing that's clear is that if you look overall at Minnesota, we are much higher than other places, if you take into consideration the whole picture. And that's what this gentleman said. They said, well, some of these other places, we can't make that much money in other states, so we need Minnesota, and we need what we're allowed to charge there. Well, I don't really think we want our citizens to be subsidizing citizens in other states because they need that profit to be able to offset their losses or they're not making as much money elsewhere. And you can clearly see that if you look. Most other states have a progressively smaller amount that's charged when you have large volume of copies for paper records. Most other states were the highest to begin with in terms of what we allow per page. There are a few states, as Ms. Stout said, where they build that retrieval fee into their per page cost. And so for those small requests, you could argue, depending on exactly how many pages you were requesting, that it might be more expensive. But clearly, overall, Minnesota is a lot more expensive than any place else that I saw on that. And I can figure out a way to chart that. In fact, there is a chart in here that kind of breaks it down in Minnesota from 0 to 15 records, from 15 to 50, and then I think, above that, and compares us to other states, and that's in your materials. And even that, and the article that makes that comparison quotes Minnesota as far as saying how profitable it has to be because of the how much higher we are. This for-profit businessman who talked to me about this said, and Ms. Stout has alluded to this, and we heard this last year too, that this subset, small, according to Ms. Stout, subset of people who need records because they've been hurt are being thrown into the pool. And what they have to pay for records, Ms. Stout said, well, the hospital in Duluth has to charge, hire a person who's clerical and a person who's medical records manager. And she's talking about the cost of what those people have to be paid to do all medical records copying for that hospital. And in fact, according to Ms. Stout, this copying is only a small subset set, and yet it's subsidizing all those other requests. Well, the two cannot be legally mixed, according to federal and state law. You can't allow one person who isn't only supposed to pay the cost of getting their medical records to be subsidizing everybody else's medical record request. And I know that's happening because the businesses that are contracting with hospitals, according to this gentleman I talked to, agree that they will do all these other medical copying requests free of charge in order to get the business for charging somebody the retrieval fee plus these per-page copying costs. So they're making so much money on it that for this small subset of people and what they're charging, they're underwriting everybody else by very contract that they're making. And then on top of that, Senator Moi, or Madam Chair, when we're hearing about this, we're talking about the cost of storing records, the cost of having to go retrieve the records, and all these other things that hospitals have to do because they have medical records. It is not allowed by either state or federal law to be incorporating your overall cost of your medical records department into the cost of copying, making a copy for someone. They're only supposed to have to pay the copy cost. Actually, the federal law is even more specific about this. It says very specifically only the copy cost. And there's an article that I provided about this that says that states that have retrieval fees like we do, and the argument that the retrieval is part of this cost, is not allowed by federal HIPAA law. And so, you know, obviously if we could get this all onto an electronic disk, some of this argument would go away because the paper copies would become kind of a thing of the past, I'm assuming, and they're more efficient. Seems like for everyone involved, there's a cost involved. The only one I would think presumably who isn't going to like that change is going to be the one people who are making money right now and doing the copying.
So Ms. Larson missed out. Senator Olson has said that you're making money from doing this, or that you are making money from the narrow classification of requests to subsidize the other requests. Speak to that.
Madam Chair, here's the dilemma. You get a request from an attorney for a large medical record goes back several years. I met with a medical records person at one of our hospitals who showed me four banker boxes full of medical records, and these weren't electronically printed off. These were the records going back since this was a child case, since the child was born. And the attorney had asked for all the records going back to the beginning of time that they had for this patient, and they had spent days and days and days going to off-site storage, finding the records, going through them, making sure that they were complete, making sure that there weren't pages missing, doing all the due diligence work that they felt they had to do to be able to present a certified medical record to that attorney. The amount of time that's required to do that is significant, and hospitals need to be able to recoup those expenses. Now, there's only a couple ways that you can recuperate your expenses. One is to try to figure out an average and come up with a payment structure similar to what the health department did in 91, where they created a per-page fee that they felt was fair, or to try to charge by time and minutes. You know, maybe do a time study. Okay, I'm going to head out now and start on this medical record and charge the actual time that it takes to do that. That is also a lot of paperwork and a lot of tracking, but that's another way to do that. Essentially, all the hospitals want to do is recuperate our expenses so that medical record requests from the attorneys don't end up costing us more money and taking away from patient care costs. We don't want our patient care to have to subsidize medical record retrieval.
Ms. Thal, I understand that piece. But what I'm hearing you say, though, is that then you know that you are representing an industry that's not acting within what the law permits them to do. And if in these unusual cases it's costing you added, why not come back and say, listen, we need to change the statutory scheme based on how we are being asked to do work in these particular categories so that we could account for the additional cost of the enhancement. But you haven't done that. And so what we're hearing from these practitioners is that the paper, and what I'm hearing from Senator Olson, is that federal law says this, state law says this, but that's not what the industry is practicing, and we need them to come back to what the laws and the regulations are saying. Perhaps you have a very valid point in that in these unusual cases, our costs are enhanced and we need to recoup that. That's a separate issue than saying that this is a bad bill and what they're trying to do here. If it's an issue of enhanced cost and you want to recoup that, that ought to be something that should be brought up for a conversation, that it, within the context of the statutory scheme that we have in place. Secondly, what I'm concerned about is that as an industry organization, you recognize that this is a pattern of hardship for these organizations that you represent. And so now you're here saying, you know, what you're proposing in this bill is going to impose even greater hardship on us. Well, then slice and dice this and offer up the language and how we could be helpful in these instances where your costs are enhanced. Because we don't want, I mean, it does not add to the credibility of the industry when in opposition to this bill, you are basically saying, yep, we're, as an industry, we're not complying with what's in the statutory scheme, especially in these particular cases.
Madam Chair, we think we are complying with the statutory scheme, but to your earlier point, we have suggested to Senator Olson that what we think probably would make sense, rather than doing a bill that arbitrarily changes the, you know, the so many cents per page, to go back and relook at this. We agree wholeheartedly with your point. Maybe this is a good time to go back and relook at how we do the charging and ask the health department or whomever to go back and do a fresh study. We think that they're neutral. They're not, you know, they're not paid by us. They're a government entity, and ask them to redo their study and to come up with a better scheme that achieves really the goal, two goals. One is to get medical records out quickly and at the best affordable price possible, and to cover the costs for the facilities for doing that. That's all we ask.
Senator,
we'd be happy to have that happen.
Madam Chair, the argument about having to go back into old records and boxes and stuff doesn't really advance the discussion for where we're at on electronic records. I think that if a lawyer just sends an authorization to a hospital and says, send me what you got, well, you know, I think you're taking a big chance here, because there may be a lot of extraneous or records that are not there. I think the good lawyers would send their staff, or the lawyers would go down there and go through the records and paperclip things and say, these are the things I really need, and that's that. But the issue that is we have to look to the future at, and what's driving a lot of the discussion, is how are we supposed to deal with, now that everything's on electronic records, how do the lawyers or the interested parties or whoever's that have asked, how do they get access to it? How do they identify what they want? And how can we do it in a way that's cost effective? And so instead of just driving something out so that you get a stack of records like this, of which 75% or more is just all duplicate records, how do you segregate that out? And that's where we really have to get the discussion going. So when we're talking about the old paper records and old files, you know, that's one set of, you know, that's one discussion. But I think that what's going to drive us in the future is how do we, you know, deal with the electronic records. And that's what I think we have to get down to. And, you know, this this has to get resolved, both sides of it.
That's true. Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, just for the information of the committee, if you're looking through the information about other states, there are some states. As I said, federal law, we have to comply with federal law. And I would submit that Minnesota law right now doesn't comply with federal law in terms of the retrieval and in terms of this practice of underwriting the cost of other records through the medical records function through charging this small subset of people. And I would once again object to the characterization that somehow this is for attorneys. If someone's in an accident, the insurance company is going to need to get a copy of that record, and that insurance company is going to get charged the same way. And that's going to add to the cost of everyone's insurance. But even in situations where we're talking about the person's attorney, it's still the person and their cost. And so for I think we have to keep coming back and making sure that we're saying this isn't a situation which is seems to be viewed by the medical records community where we can sort of stick it to the lawyers, because this is not, that's not what's happening. It's the people and the patients that have to pay the bill. But some states charge for off-site retrieval, and they have a separate charge for those aberrant types of things. The article I have suggests that under federal law, that's probably not legal. And I would equate it to being something like when someone wants a copy of their legal file. We consider it to be a personal right to have access in certain situations to records that have your name on them. Whether it's the legal records you have with my law firm, whether it's the medical records you have with a medical facility, whether it's records you have with certain government entities. And the decision that that person has, and I need to store those records anyway for my own sake, and so do the medical facilities. But if somebody wants a copy of those records from me as a lawyer, I better darn well cough them up quickly. And there's a very low fee. I can't remember what it is, but I'm thinking it's in the neighborhood of around 20-some cents that I can charge for that copying cost. And if I have to go get it off-site, well, that was my decision to store it. I can't charge more to go get it off-site because it's a person's right to get a copy of those records for the reasonable charge, and the only thing I'm allowed to charge are costs related to the actual copying. And I would submit that under federal and state law, that's how we treat medical records too. And so most of this chart is really not relevant to how we should be looking at the cost issue. And that's just the law, whether we like it or not, because we place a high priority on citizens' rights to have access to these records at a reasonable cost. Instead, in practice, what's happened here is we've grown this huge business in terms of using it to cross-subsidize. And I understand the pressures on hospitals. I understand the cost pressures, so I can understand how this could happen. But I'm frankly... that's why I wanted to bring this bill forward and revisit it, because it's become a real roadblock to justice for a lot of people, but it's also become a way to cross-subsidize costs.
Ms. Stout, has practitioners ever complained to the Hospital Association about unreasonable fees or excessive fees?
Madam Chair, not that I'm aware of. In fact, when we first heard about this issue was when this bill came up last year, and at that time, we heard that, as from an association perspective, we heard there's a concern here. And we've been meeting with a group of medical records folks over the summer trying to dig into this, trying to understand the issue better. As an association, we believe that the best way to proceed is to sit down and come up with a better structure. We think it's going to take some work. We're willing to put that work in. We think that also it's important to remember these aren't just hospital records. We're going to have to include our friends in nursing homes and clinics in that discussion. We also would like to include the health department that's working on the e-health initiatives and trying to make sure that as we roll out the electronic medical records, we're meeting the federal requirements, and we think that they should be involved in proceeding. But we think that as we all need to sit down and work on this, work on some consistency in making this system better. We think that the approach in the bill brought this issue forward, but doesn't solve the problem. It's a much more difficult fix than the approach taken in the legislation.
Ms. Dow, I'm getting a little bit of a sense of deja vu. I seem to recall that this was the reason that was offered up for us to not take action on this bill during the legislative session. Now we're in December. It's been, what, 3, 4, 5, 6 months since we've had that discussion. And what I'm hearing is that some work has been done, but not to the degree that this committee had expected work to be done so that we can move on this bill. I would encourage you, as the representative of the association, to go back and tell the association that I believe it's in their best interest to expedite that conversation and to come to us with a proposal on how we can be helpful. If you think that in order to get people to the table to have this conversation, that somehow now we're going to have to create a task force or a commission to make that happen, I think that that's a conversation that we ought to be engaged in. Otherwise, this bill will go forward. And based on the questions that were asked today and the sense that we got, I think that you can take that as a message back to the association to say that this is an area that we have to that needs to be addressed and that this committee is interested. This not only the subcommittee, but I think that from a global, broader policy discussion, I believe that the full Judiciary Senate Judiciary Committee would have an interest in this bill and this discussion. And today you have four members of the in this subcommittee, but the next time you all come before the Senate, it may be in the context of the broader policy committee because the implications are much broader than that. And you know, working with four senators, if we can't address this, imagine this issue being unleashed in the full committee and what the issues that could be brought up. So I think that from a problem-solving standpoint, we've given a lot of time and attention to this issue, and I think you all need to work with Senator Olson and the other advocates on this issue and come up with a timetable on how this can be resolved. We can't punt it, and we're not going to continue to punt it because it's from Senator Betzel's comments. I don't practice, but I'm alarmed by the inconsistency in the industry, and I think you all have the ability to solve this problem without us having to do a bill that I'm frankly not comfortable with because of the implications for my hospitals. I'm not comfortable with the implications for this bill. But you all have the ability to solve this if we're looking for a way to solve it without having heavy financial implications for the hospitals that are involved. So I think that that's what we're going to leave at today, Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, if Senator I could Olson? Just – my response to the idea of having the Department of Health do a study – and then another suggestion that was made was putting this out to like 2015 is, first of all, this is a problem that exists today. Clearly, Minnesota is way outside the norm in terms of what we're charging. I suggested, and clearly I think by the examples I gave and even by this own testimony of the cross-subsidizing, this is something that isn't following the law as far as what's supposed to be charged. My suggestion was that someone representing this group sit down with someone representing this group and actually more than sit down, maybe actually go to the facilities, because a lot of the discussion people were hypothesizing but didn't really know firsthand. And even today we've heard some contradictory information about what's possible and what isn't. And then maybe take along a third person, a person, you know, mediator or a person with some technology understanding or whomever they might choose as a third person. Put some time in on this over the next couple of months and then come back to us with their suggestions. That was my suggestion, because we know in the budget we don't have money to commission studies, and we also know that this is a growing problem. We also know that as e-records are being developed, there is a cost incentive in printing these paper records, and we don't want that cost incentive to drive how the software is developed and how the practice is developed.
Well, Senator Olson, it's your bill, and to the people who are here in this conversation, you've heard the author, Senator Betzel.
Anybody else want to be heard before you?
You know, I think that on this we needed an update on what was going on. We're not trying to generate a vote in a particular direction, sure, where I think more information is not going to necessarily influence that. It would appear that we have plenty of opportunities and time to have a further discussion of this bill, and I don't think that we need to spend any more time in the language that's before us since it's going to be changed. Ms. Larson, Ms. Stout, thank you very much for your time and for being here today.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, do you want to come and take over your subcommittee for the rest of the discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Uh, Senator Betzel?
Yep. Madam Chair, the issue that you have, it's Revisor's Bill number 104310, which you've got a copy, is a bill that the Office of Enterprise Technology has an interest in. They've discussed it with me, and apparently this is a bill there. Wants to present to the 2010 legislative session as an agency bill, which apparently has been submitted to the governor's office. I don't know the status of it at that time, but at some point the bills will be released, and it is my intention that to then introduce the bill once it comes from there. But this issue deals with cookies on computer systems, and as you may know, there are various websites that you can visit and so forth. If you buy something on, say, Amazon.com, the fact that you've visited the website, they can store various information both in your computer and in theirs. So the next time you come back and visit them, they say, well, since you've already purchased something along this line, you might be interested in something else. And as a policy matter, we wanted to prevent government data from creating cookies where we could track individuals when they visited websites from government information. However, there is sometimes a desire to have a temporary cookie because if somebody is making an application, sometimes you actually have to maintain that information for a short period of time. And the Office of Enterprise Technology is here, and they can discuss the need and the desire for the bill and what they intend to accomplish by it. So maybe they can come forward and give a further explanation of it.
Thank you. And Senator Betzel, just so you know, I did have a nice phone conversation, I believe, with the same gentleman who explained this to me. I think this is another example of how as technology has advanced, you know, one thing that we define like a cookie we didn't think of in terms of another use that's now developed, and so it's just something else that needs to be addressed that wasn't thought of because of technology advances.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Michael Meilenberg. I'm here representing the Office of Enterprise Technology along with my colleague, James Kauth. Thank you so much for this opportunity to discuss our proposal, what we really believe is a housekeeping clarification to a statute relating to computer cookies. James and I are here not only representing OET, but what we also call the enterprise, which is the other state executive branch agencies. A number of agencies have brought to our attention the current statute in Chapter 13, which relates to cookies. We are seeking a legislative clarification in order to facilitate electronic government services to citizens. And the way this works is a cookie, as Senator Betzold explained, is a small data file stored on a user's computer. There are two types of cookies. There are permanent cookies and there are temporary cookies. Typically, when this conversation occurs, people usually are referring to permanent cookies. It's the sort of thing, as Senator Betzold explains, that allows you to go to weather.com. And if you've been there before and you entered in your zip code and you return on a subsequent day, a permanent cookie would say, hello, welcome again, Michael Meilenberg. Here is the weather forecast in your area today. So commonly, private entities will use permanent cookies. The state of Minnesota does not use permanent cookies. But one thing that we do need in order to facilitate government services to citizens, whether it be an online application for benefits or something similar or a grant or even maybe filing an online complaint against somebody, is we need a temporary cookie in order to facilitate that transaction if that transaction requires a citizen to submit information to government. So if you were filling out an application and you needed to fill out your name, and you also needed to fill out your address, maybe you even had to make a payment to the government because it was something that you were purchasing, like a license, you would need a temporary cookie in order to go through that transaction. If you've ever done it before, you'll notice on page one, maybe you'll fill out your name, and then on page two, you'll fill out your address. Well, you can't, without a temporary cookie, the system won't remember the information that you put in on page one and be able to tie it to the information you put in on page two. So it is really a necessary component in order for those transactions to take place. Across the country, governments are permitting the use of temporary session cookies. The federal government has been active in this area. In 2000, under the Clinton administration, the Office of Management and Budget changed its policy to clarify that the cookies restrictions that they had recently placed in effect were only meant to apply to permanent cookies. And not only did they make the change, but the formal memorandum actually states that they do not deem temporary cookies to threaten users' privacy. It doesn't require the collection of personal identifiable information. Lastly, you'll note that the language that we have drafted at this point, and which has been approved by the governor's office and is being sent over for jacketing or has been sent over for jacketing, requires that the information, the temporary cookie that is collected, it requires it to be deleted from the system. It is really a connection that takes place between the government and the person who is submitting the information, and in order for that temporary cookie to be used by the government, it would have to be deleted from the browser. So once the browser is closed, the temporary cookie would no longer exist. So it's not something we would like to emphasize. It's not something that government would hold on to. It would not be something that we would be able to use to track where somebody is visiting on government websites. There would be no information maintained by the government. It is simply something that would permit the transaction to take place. We believe that moving in this direction with the statute is consistent with the intent of the statute, which is to protect people's privacy. And we also believe that it is a small incremental change in relation to what other states have done. Some states actually allow the use of permanent cookies, and we're not proposing that we go that far and do not need to go that far. But we believe that by allowing this clarification in the statutes, it'll allow us to use electronic government services to the maximum ability in order to allow citizens to use online services and also allow us to protect the information that people think is important to them.
Thank you. Is the other witness planning to testify or just here for questions?
Mr. Kauth is our applications development expert, and he's here to answer any technical questions you might have about the way a cookie might operate as well.
Okay, thank you. Do the members have questions?
I'm curious to our two witnesses. How many times have you been to the legislature to testify on cookies?
This is definitely my first time.
I don't think it will be your last.
Senator Betzel, do you have any questions?
No, I think it's rather straightforward. I don't know if anybody else wants to hear. Obviously, we can't take any action today on it, but we just want to get the issue out here.
I have a couple of questions. Mr. Millenberg, do you know if the term cookie is defined anywhere in our state law?
Madam Chair, members, yes.
Oh, here it is. Okay.
It's the previous section.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, the statute does define a cookie. The definition, though, doesn't really make a reference to whether it's temporary or permanent.
Right.
The language that we have proposed is sort of self-defining in that it defines what it would have to be a temporary cookie and qualify for the exception of that.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Millenberg. Well, Counselor Ms. Pontius has now put this definition in front of me. And I guess the reason I asked is because I was just wondering, you know, it's hard to project what might come up in the future in terms of technology, so I suppose there's no way you can really answer this question. But I'm just wondering in terms of if any thought has been given to whether we're better off narrowing the definition of cookie or if we're better off coming up with specific exceptions to that, you know, as we go forward, depending on what things might happen. So, you know, in other words, if we narrow the definition of cookie, then maybe we're not protecting everything as much as possible. I'm not sure. But, you know, if there are going to be lots of exceptions, maybe we should look at the definition of that. And I'm just wondering, I just thought I'd throw that out there for thought, just wondering if you've thought about that.
Madam Chair, members, when we looked at the statute, that was our first inclination as well, was to modify the definitions so it made sense. But as we looked at that further, I think there was a little bit of confusion on our part between the definitions relating to the cookie, and then there's also a definition in the statute relating to electronic government services, and it uses those two terms, or electronic government information maybe is the precise language, but it uses the two terms interchangeably. Electronic access data is the term I was referring to. It uses the term cookie and electronic access data interchangeably for purposes of the restriction. And so it became the question of, well, then do we have to modify both definitions? And we just thought that it would be clear to everybody involved if we just set out an exception for precisely what we are intending to accomplish here.
So, Mr. Millenberg, it does sound like you gave some thought to that and decided this would be the best approach to take. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill?
Okay. Not even a bill yet. It's just
this proposal, I guess, draft proposal. I guess, yeah, because this has just come up since after session ended. So, well, if there's no one else that would like to testify, then I'd just like to thank everyone for being here, and our meeting today is adjourned.
Thank you.
And if we would have taken the BCA step up, that would have been another three or four.